cover, but the final track on his album, 1954 album, Horace Silver and the Jazz Messengers. This tune is titled Doodlin'. And as with so many of Horace Silver's compositions, it became a jazz standard. Of course, Horace is at piano, Hank Mobley on tenor sax, Kenny Dorham on trumpet, Doug Watkins on bass, and Art Blakey on drums. Horace Silver died on June the 18th, 2014, in New Rochelle, New York. He was 85 years old. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we're going to talk about a couple of things today, but I wanted to explore one of them in particular, having to do with this family separation policy and practice, and the way people are coping with it in different sectors of our society. President Trump's zero-tolerance immigration policy has caused the forcible separation of thousands of families at the southern border, as you know, all of whom, says Trump, were seeking to enter the United States illegally. Swift reaction to the newly hatched policy temporarily has slowed the pace of the program, but not official inquiries about it. With more than 2,000 families separated and no clear plan by the administration for how detained individuals legally are to be processed, a federal judge on Tuesday ordered an end to family separations within a month and within 14 days if separations involve children 5 years old or younger. Trump has overstepped the boundaries of his authority, I think, with this policy. He invokes national security and the right to secure our borders, unquote, as the reasons for his draconian actions. But I think we need to see something else develop here. The enormity of abuses committed and still being committed under Trump's zero-tolerance immigration policy warrant immediate investigation, not only by a special U.S. committee, but also by an international body. And we need certainly to see this proceed, because let's take a look at what is happening here under the idea of securing our borders and in the interest of national security. The borders need to be secured no more now than at any other time. It is understood that most countries see a need to secure their borders. But that really is not enough of a statement. It doesn't give enough of the information behind the movement of people. Why are people moving and in such large numbers from one place to the other, or from several places to another? Why is this happening? Why is it being made to look like, for some reason, they just feel like doing it? You know, they get up one morning and they say, hey, this is a good time to just cast my fate to the wind and begin a trek. I'm headed toward a border, and that border would be a U.S. border. I'm taking my child with me. I'm taking everything I have with me. And yet, it is viewed as a kind of casual decision. people just kind of wake up and think of doing this, and then they do it. You don't have to be an immigrant to understand how difficult it is to arrive at a decision to leave everything you have, if you have anything at all, but to leave it behind, leave your relatives and family behind, leave everything you know, you're familiar with, the foods that you eat, the culture that sustained you. You're leaving all of that behind, and you are taking a chance literally with your life. For one simple reason, and that is you cannot exist in your country anymore. You can't make it under the conditions in which you live. And you decide, well, I could take a chance. Let me take a chance. This is not unique to people from Central America and South America and the Caribbean and wherever people choose to leave. It's a worldwide phenomenon. People reach a point in their lives. Sometimes it's individual, sometimes it's a collective decision, but they do reach a point when they decide that life has become untenable and they must take a gamble. Now, it is convenient and it is politically correct to look at immigration or migration or the movement, mass movements of people as a kind of assault. That people are just making their decisions willy-nilly and they are putting themselves in danger, which is one thing, but then they are imposing themselves on other countries and making those other countries responsible for their lives by taking such summary action. You know, they made up their minds, they cast their fates to the wind, and they're moving. What will happen, they don't know. But the hope is that they will see some kind of respite at the end of their journey. Now, most people don't understand that because most people haven't been there. But I would even argue that in many ways, people have been there. They understand that. But we get into this idea, which is exactly what Trump is preying upon, of suspicion and hate for the other. Don't come in here. Don't come to my country. This is my country, not your country. You stay in your country. As you know, I'm a very proud immigrant. I am an American citizen. But I didn't reach the point of decision by myself. I grew up in pretty decent circumstances. My father was a businessman. My mother owned her own businesses. We lived pretty well. Comparatively speaking, we lived quite well. And yet, At age seven, I shared this with you. At age seven, I got two birthday gifts. And we are not a birthday gift family. My mother gave me a bank book, and she put $5 in it, and she told me, you have to save your money because you will need that money someday. My father's gift to me was a passport, because he knew that the future that he had envisioned, he and my mother had envisioned for their nine children, was not going to be fulfilled in the country as it was, a colonial country repeatedly subjugated by foreign powers, France, Spain, Britain, the U.S., so that the country as a whole was like a gas station, a service station. For generations, it was that way. Foreign powers would take from your country whatever it is they needed, and usually under the threat of war or warlike action. They will bleed your country dry. After hundreds of years of bleeding my little tiny island dry, what was there to show for it? Were there colleges and universities? No. Were there even decent roads? Despite the fact that since the days of Sir Walter Raleigh, he was patching up his ship with pitch and tar from a tar pit in Trinidad. Thousands, if not millions of miles of American road is paved with the pitch coming out of my tiny little island. And yet our roads were not in good condition. Did they build modern hospitals? Did they build anything that would support continued progress? No. Not at all. That's not the arrangement. The arrangement is they come to get what you have. They will take everything possible and leave nothing in place that could sustain a full and healthy life. That's been the experience of most immigrants. There are no jobs when I was growing up in Trinidad for the locals that really had good pay and could afford people to live comfortably, especially given their output. It didn't happen that way. We were there simply to be exploited. Our tiny little island was used and abused by a succession of marauders who gave very little or nothing, but took just about everything. And when they left us worse off than when they came, under the gun. that had come, you know, with nice manners to say good morning and hello, how are you? And I thought we should have some breakfast. That's not the arrangement. So you come from a country that has systematically been disemboweled. And the assumption is you are still in charge of your life. You will figure it out. We have no further responsibility. We never had any responsibility because we were invaders. We were marauders. We were thieves. We were scoundrels. We took everything that you could possibly have that would be of use to us. That was the whole point of slavery. When you look at the systematic disemboweling of entire continents by marauders of every stripe, you see what the intention is. You see what the intention is. And then they say, you know what? You should still be able to function according to our estimations. You should still be able to function. So many people come. I did not come under any extraordinary stress. But that doesn't mean that there wasn't extraordinary stress. I'm telling you that at the age of 7, my parents were clear, my parents were clear that all 9 of their children had to pursue their lives outside of the country in order to have a decent life. They muddled through under a succession of colonial rulers, but they were not willing to have that happen to their children. Their children, they believed, deserved a decent shot at life. That was the understanding in my head, as passed on to me by my parents by the age of 7. I don't know many children in the world. I mean, you think about it. I don't know many children in the world who at the age of 7, they get this kind of schooling. Happy birthday to you. You'll be leaving here soon. Okay. It's not an easy decision. So when Trump and people like Trump super simplify the process of migration or immigration and make it appear that immigrants are practically, you know, conniving crooks. They're trying to get something for nothing, the great American life for nothing. When Americans left Trinidad, the country, as small as it was, as I said, was disemboweled. We had to rebuild because the great mighty United States wanted to block off or have control over the entire Caribbean basin. This was not something that they worked out and asked permission for. They just came. That's it. And everything was catering to their needs. It was about catering to their needs. There was no question about whether they were invading our borders. You have these super ships all over the Caribbean. Who's going to be talking about invasion of our borders? What was the point in talking about that? What are you going to fight them with? How are you going to say no to that? They just come and take what they need. They leave when they're ready. And that's the end of that. You try to go back to your life. So it's the same situation here. People are acting as if it is so extraordinary that people would journey to wherever they can to get a better shot at life. And if we forget the historical reference of it as well. You know, California used to be Mexico. Arizona used to be Mexico. Texas used to be Mexico. You know, people forget these things. They just took the land. So when we look at these questions, these are not simple questions about really crafty, conniving, nasty people thinking about getting over on the United States and sneaking in. You look at the people and you see that they're scrambling simply to survive. And in my view, that is okay. That is a natural imperative to survive. We do not think of the so-called pilgrims in that way. No. Although they're the rejects of Europe, coming with the intention of stealing land, committing acts of genocide, and creating havoc, and installing themselves as leaders, and literally taking over a country. We don't see that kind of representation of that kind of migration. And even now, when Trump talks about the border, he means the southern border, he's not talking about the northern border of the United States, where the immigrant and migrant traffic is white. He's not threatening to build a wall at the northern border. He is not threatening to seal up the tunnel from Saginaw, Michigan, into Windsor, Ontario. He's not talking about subjecting European illegal immigrants, if you will, to the same kinds of scrutiny as he's talking about the folks on the South who used to own that huge vast tract of land. All that land that is now American land was Mexico. But now we have a state engaging in a kind of, I would call these war crimes, where you capture people and their children. You use the children as leverage to control the people. That is kidnapping. You don't account for where you're putting them. All you want to do is to use this as a monumental public relations, well, I don't say public relations, but as a monumental propaganda tool. You're not hurried to solve the problem. You're not even recognizing that you have a duty to solve the problem. what you actually are committing, this is actually a crime. By international definition, this is a crime. No different from what any terrorist organization would do. You know, you go in like they did, you go into a village and you capture the girls and they're never seen again for years. And they're used as pawns to trade off for whatever it is that the group that captures them wishes to trade off for whatever it is that they want. It's what was intended with this zero tolerance policy. It was to use little children, babies even, as pawns. And to keep going the propaganda that essentially the United States was being invaded by Mexicans and Colombians and Hondurans and these all undesirable people, and that you are entitled in the name of security, border security, and national security to firm up and protect your borders. It's nonsense. But it goes beyond being nonsense. Trump has committed many nonsensical acts, but this is, in my view, a criminal act. And it has to be referenced that way. And it has to be dealt with that way. And we as a nation should stand up against this. Is outrageous behavior of a country, particularly that extols the virtues of democracy and such high-minded ideals. You do not steal people's children, put them in concentration camps, which is really what it is. You are not processing them. You're not even clear what you're doing. But you intend still to do it and continue to break the law without any punitive action taken against you. Well, what does that say? What is that a sign of? But totalitarianism and just undiluted racism. Now, I could see if Trump is very concerned about the borders, if he did the same thing on the North, but he's not doing that. In fact, 17 legal organizations agree with me. They pointed out the same thing that I pointed out some time ago. If you're so agitated about your borders, why aren't you doing the same thing in the North, where the Europeans come through? How come you're not exercised about that? The traffic is steady through that tunnel from connecting Windsor and Saginaw. You're not upset about that. You're not making any noise about the way Europeans come through to the United States illegally, and the various mechanisms that are used to get them settled and to get them part of into the mainstream of life. I think it is time that an international body be convened, because we have a major crime being committed here. And he's getting away with it under the idea that he is protecting our borders. But in our name, essentially committing acts that are tantamount to kidnapping, this would be considered almost an act of terror, to terrorize these people who are entitled to certain protections under international law. Under international law, they are entitled to certain protections. They are entitled to have their children. They are entitled to be treated fairly under the law. But you see, these are not white people. So there is no obligation, and as far as Trump is concerned, there is no obligation to treat them fairly. In fact, this was the whole idea, to grab them, to corral them into areas of concentration where they can be, like in the old days, they can be shown in the ways that the old circus people used to do, to show people from other countries as exotic animals that have been captured. You keep the narrative going. See how hard we're working to protect the purity of American genetics by keeping the riffraff out. And people are agreeing with it. This is the scary part. People are agreeing, whether through their silence or even through their active participation. They are agreeing that it is okay to behave this way, contrary to the law. Congress, they're mouthing objections, will be very upset about this, yes, but there isn't yet a legal fight between Congress and the president. A lot of talking. Lots of press releases being issued. But in the end, they're just mouthing off. They don't see it as a huge issue with all these different currents underneath, running underneath. They don't understand that. Because they, too, have serious streaks of xenophobia running in their veins. I have a different view about immigration and migration. Because since time immemorial, people have moved from one place to another. You're trying to tell me there were no borders back then? Of course there were borders, because people had what you could consider to be national identities. But they understood that this is how life works. There's an ebb and flow. There is all kind of contact being made, facilitated through trade, through intermarriage, through necessity. You may have drought in one place, or you may have the exact opposite. You may have too much rain in another place. You have natural disasters that call for people to move from one place to the other. And somehow they were able to see the logic of that. Nobody was threatened by that. You know, people just moved. That's the evidence we have been presented with. People moving according to their needs. In the United States, we have so many indigenous peoples moving from one area to another, depending on the season. They have lands all over the place where they go. But the whole thing of the movement of people was tied to what? Survival. When the Europeans came, it was a whole different attitude. We must annihilate them all. We must kill them all. That is one of the support posts, if you will, of Trump's zero tolerance policy. Kill these people off. Get rid of them. And my contribution is the zero tolerance policy, when people should have had a zero tolerance policy about him and his family. His grandfather came to the United States as an immigrant. What did he contribute? What did he contribute to this country as an immigrant? Well, he had a number of whorehouses, and the reports were that he was selling drugs and selling the meat of horses that died out of sheer exhaustion in his so-called restaurant. And that's where Trump gets his hotel genes from. But that was his grandfather. Not a stellar citizen. His father, with a great affinity to the Ku Klux Klan in New York City, arrested at a Klan rally, going on to develop real estate that will absolutely not be available to people of color, living in a restrictive covenant neighborhood, no Jews, no blacks. That's his contribution as a citizen, as an immigrant. His mother was a maid and came to the United States to be a better paid maid. And look what we have in him. So, you see, when people start talking about the value, what is the qualitative value that we gain from having these kinds of people, meaning Mexicans and Ecuadorians and Hondurans and so forth, giving them access to the good life? Look what we got from the Trumps in return. And they dare to suggest that people ought to measure up. You really have to laugh. But this is a matter that requires, I think, not only a national inquiry, but international inquiry, because this is a matter now of international law. And major crimes are being committed here in the name of securing our borders. And I don't think we need to be comfortable about that. I don't see that we should tolerate that kind of equivalence, that we should feel safer because the country is engaging in kidnapping of children, holding them for ransom, breaking up their families, just like in slavery days, and holding up to the world the undergirding idea of racial inferiority, giving the government permission to do whatever it should do or it wants to do to maintain white supremacy. I'll stop here and take a break and come back to your comments and questions right after this at 888-874-4888. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we're talking about a need for two levels of inquiry about the Trump zero-tolerance immigration policy that is doing and has done so much damage and against all kinds of laws. Laws that pertain to the United States and laws that pertain to the international community. Jay from New York, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon, Eutrice. I hope all is well.
First of all,
I'd like to thank you for your analysis because you are the only one, and I say this again, the only one that I've heard brought in the northern border to the discussion of what's going on. Nobody else is talking about or even discussing all of the people that.
Oh, did we lose Jay? Are you there?
Come through this. Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, now I can.
Other countries that are coming through the borders, a.k.a. Mexico and the other islands. So this is basically nothing more than a racist agenda at the highest order, because all other white nationalities are coming through Canada, and no one's even talking about it or addressing. Now, when you say what has Donald Trump family brung to America, they've brung one thing and one thing only: whiteness. That's all. Just whiteness. Whiteness that has been able to integrate itself into whiteness and become extremely successful and extremely wealthy. And now in the process, because of the other white people in this country who just basically don't have a clue but are practicing a form of nationalism, you have this individual wreaking havoc on a country that he doesn't even respect enough to show his taxes to treat other members of the society fairly. So, you know, my thing is, how are we as a community and a collective going to fight back? And the truth of the matter is, we don't know how to fight back, nor do we have a plan on how to fight back. And the bottom line is, when you talk about the Democrats and you say fight back, Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, and the rest of them are in agreements with Donald Trump. Don't let nobody fool you about that. It becomes more and more clear.
At the time that you saw people coming in from Europe, not all Europeans were accepted as white. Not at all. This was a country shoring up its identity as white Anglo-Saxon Protestant. Germanic people were not part of it. You know, Middle Eastern people were not part of it. They went through the history of how the United States transformed racial categorizations to suit itself. It's fascinating. And then the law on top of that. But make no mistake, even people with Germanic backgrounds, nope, as the Trumps were, they were not the cream of the crop. Absolutely not.
But the one thing that they did was, what did they do? They changed their last names.
Yes.
They Americanized their last names in a sense. But what I was trying to say in regards to Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi, if you notice, the only person lately that they've really attacked in regards to Donald Trump, funnily as it may be, is Maxine Waters. What gives them the nerve and the right to ask that woman to apologize to this Neanderthal? Why haven't they asked any of the white congressmen who have said things in regards to Trump? Why must they stand up and ask a black woman to capitulate and apologize to this Neanderthal? And it's just amazing to me how these so-called Democrats just go along with this nonsense. And they don't step back and fight against Nancy.
We have to move along. I'm sorry to say, Jay, I want to get some other calls in before our time is up. Henry from Chicago, you're next.
Hey, Idris, how's it going?
Okay, how's by you?
It's okay. When I think about this this immigration plan or immigration illegalization that Donald Trump administration is doing, I often think about the late Dr. Francis Quest Welsing's theory or definition of racism, where she talks about white genetic annihilation. This is the perfect example of what Dr. Welsing was talking about in regards to whites preventing white genetic annihilation. So when you talk about sealing the borders, this is one of their defenses in regards to that, because you talked about this before, about the report of whites being the number minority in this country by 2040. So this is just their plan to prevent that.
Look, I could take you to communities right now where I'm guessing at least one in four people are not legal immigrants, or they enjoy a very interesting status of dual citizenship. So when things get hard here, they go back to their homes. When things get better there, they come back to the United States. They have very special privileges that way. I don't hear a problem with that.
That's true.
Okay. So when we hear my point is, when we are hearing these terms being flung around in conjunction with the migration of people from Central and South America to lands or parts of the world that used to be their own, we should have an entirely different understanding of what is happening here and what is causing this virulent reaction on the part of Trump, and why it is meant to serve as notice to his constituency that he means to keep people in their place. He really has a problem with accepting people across the board just, you know, for who they are. And under the guise, it's a cowardly move. He thinks he's very smart. He thinks he's quite sophisticated in this. But this is why I think the international community should assemble a committee that should probe this, because it has way too many way too many similarities with the Nazi camps. Way too many. And we have had Nazi camps in the United States before. We did not see a great outpouring of outrage when Japanese were rounded up. But this is a modern day version of that kind of mentality, which is at the base of shaping public opinion and behavior. So far, it's working well. There's not really too much of an over-the-top outrage, so it's being controlled, but the signal needs to be sent that people, you know, this dog whistle that he's been blowing, people are hearing it.
Yes, it is. And especially what's really bothering me is some members of the black community agreeing with this policy.
Yeah. Well, you know, as I said, you can't expect. I should put it the other way. You should expect that kind of thing. It's a matter of people not being well-educated. So they tend to side even with their oppressors. Khalil from South Carolina, you're on the air.
Hi, how you doing today?
Okay, how about you, Khalil?
Well, I'm trying to survive after this terrible news from yesterday. But, oh, my goodness, I love listening to you as many other people do. And you only let your hair down when it's necessary. In other words, you only drop what you really think when it's appropriate. I mean, that's what I see. You know, you're real. You know, you got the liberty. You know what I'm saying? You come, and this, I was excited. I'm going to start off happy. I know I only got a minute or two, but when I heard Lynton Kwesi Johnson yesterday, oh my goodness. Oh, that, I'm telling you, I know you must have some mad professor in Kentucky in your library somewhere. But I mean it. I remember the first time I heard him, and it changed the way I listened to music. You know, like Letter, you know, about the Brixton correction, the beating, you know what I mean? Dunfermline. It's too much. It's beautiful. It's what I'm saying. So that was
Thank
the happy
you.
Thing. Yeah. You know what? I have no doubt. I know you got some nice things. I can just tell. But anyway, yes. We should all be frightened. This is unacceptable behavior, and we can't count on this do nothing Congress right now. This is what I have to ask of our fellow Americans. Like, this is beyond politics. This is right and wrong. Because what 70-some-odd-year-old white man from New York City, when asked on the campaign trail, what do you think about the neo-Nazis and the white supremacists that support you? And he says, oh, I never heard of that. What are you talking about? And if you look at history, remember, that's what it's called, the invisible empire of the Ku Klux Klan, because they are trained to deny. They don't exist. You know, don't, what are you talking about?
His father knew it existed.
See, middle America doesn't understand he was a slumlord. You see, they don't understand it, that he's always been a scoundrel. And I'm really not trying to get too personal, but this is deep doo-doo. We're in some deep doo-doo. And this economy, I have in 2 seconds, I really, what's going on now, I really believe, is a shift. They want, the people in control want this shift. And they put, he's a puppet. We all got played. Obama was set up. They set Hillary Clinton up against him knowing that Hillary would lose. They knew it would be a backlash. So they knew, because come on, you can't stand to see some black man put his behind on a toilet seat in the White House. That's, come on, you can't see that. So, you know, that's a no brainer. So here comes the great white hope. Okay, Donald Trump, the dotard, you know, this mentally ill fascist who's easily manipulated. So here we are now. Now, this is a shift, you see, because Putin is controlling him. do you understand that when asked, well, what time are you going to meet Putin? You know, because this is an unchaperoned meeting. And he said, well, I don't know. That's like your daughter. When you ask your daughter, when is your boyfriend coming by? Well, I don't know. But he said he's coming. Well, that's a signal. He's trying to control you. He's got you under his thumb.
We have to leave it right there. You could finish it up, but we're out of time.
Well, we should be worried. Anyway, great. You know, and I don't know what you. I tried to send you an email. I forgot what your email was, but you know.
Leadstories@gmail.com.
Okay. Because you know what I love about your show and everyone else does is that look at the type of diversity that you draw. It's not about black. This is an American show. Period.
Thank you, Khalil. Thank you all for your comments and your contributions today. Up next, Expanding Mind with Eric Davis. And we meet again tomorrow for lots of mind stuff. We're talking tomorrow on Free Your Mind Friday. See you then. Bye-bye.